Welcome back for, I believe, the third time. Appeal number 05-2486, the United States of America versus Ralph Engel. Mr. Walters.
Good morning. May it please the court. On May 5, 2005, the district court calculated Mr. Engel's advisory guidelines range at 97 to 121 months and then sentenced him to 179 months above the top of that range. The sentence was a World Series variance from the top of Mr. Engel's guidelines range. And as this court has recently said in U.S. v. Wallace, a World Series variance deserves a World Series explanation. That didn't happen here. In fact, Mr. Engel's sentence demonstrated nothing close to the compelling justification required by this court in Dean for such an extreme variance. As this court has said on many occasions, a district court's justification of a sentence is a sliding scale. The further it strays from the range, the more compelling the justification that is needed.
If the case was sent back one more time for resentencing, though, the new guidelines would apply. And we said there's no ex post facto problem with applying the new guidelines, and the range now would permit advisory, the guideline range now would encompass even that original 325 months.
That is correct, Your Honor. And in fact, as this court has said many times, it's not for this court to decide what could have happened or what might have happened, but it's for this court to, as it said in Wallace, that in evaluating sentences for reasonableness, it's not important what the district court might have done. And as in Cunningham, the inquiry focuses on the actual reasons that were given. And what happened here is that the reasons were not adequate. And the reasons were not adequate, and the judge applied and calculated the guidelines range at 97 to 121 months. And this sentence, therefore, was 179 months above the top of that range.
179 months on top of the range.
At the top of the range, yes. No, beyond the top of the range. The range ended at 121, and the sentence was 300, so...
Probably hard to argue this case after the last case where we got a 100-year sentence.
You know, actually, it's not, Your Honor, because this is a different case completely. This is a non-guidelines case, and there's no presumption of reasonableness. And this court has clearly said in several decisions over the last year or so that in a case where there is no where it is above the guidelines range, the further above or below that you go, the more explanation that's needed. In this case, all of the district court in its brief sentencing remarks only mentions all of this 3553A factors except for the factor of protecting the public. And it says that all of the reasons in its brief statement go to the protection of the public. But in its passing remarks on the other factors, it gives no explanation as to consideration of these factors in deciding Mr. Engel's sentence. That's not enough in the face of this extreme variance. Although it is possible for a court to consider one factor above the others, and this court has said that clearly, it has also said that it's the job of the district court, especially in a extreme variance situation, for the court to determine that it's considered all of the pertinent facts of the case. And it cannot be left for this court to guess whether or not it has or has not considered all of the other factors. Tellingly, the district court does not mention or give any indication that it's considered any of the mitigating factors offered by Mr. Engel in his sentencing memorandum. This court has said in prior decisions such as Ellis and Howard that in evaluating the reasonableness of a sentence, it looks to whether the district court demonstrated concern for weighing both the mitigating and aggregating factors of the case. In the brief statements made by the district court in this extreme variant circumstance, there were no mitigating factors that were mentioned. In United States versus Cunningham, this court said there must be sufficient that it must not pass over in silence any argument by the defendant that were not so weak as to not merit discussion. In this,
we've had two long-time experienced district judges look at this case.
Correct.
Imposed a 325-month sentence. We set that aside. Now we have a 300-month sentence by a different judge. And if the sentence was if the case was sent back for resentencing again, you have new guidelines in place that would make both of those sentences within a an acceptable guideline range, what possible hope is there for this defendant that he would, upon another trip to the district court, receive a sentence that would be any better than the one he has right now?
I think there's a lot of hope, Your Honor, because respectfully, the this court said in DeMarcy that a district court could apply the current sentencing guidelines, that it's not required to because the guidelines are advisory. And so it can look to whichever set of guidelines it feels most appropriately summarizes the conduct of the defendant. In this case, in the mitigating factors that were offered by Mr. Engel, and there were numerous of them in his sentencing memorandum, he did offer both scientific evidence of recidivism at someone of his age. He also offered other information about particular programs that he could become a part of that would help him. It's not the purpose here for me to analyze the strength or the weight of those. Just as this court looks at it, it doesn't look at what the weight was that the district court put on it. What it looks at is what was said, and what was said here was nothing. There was silence as to all mitigating effect. I'm sorry. There was nothing said.
Nothing?
I'm sorry. What I meant was...
You read a different record than I did.
What was said was only the aggregating factors were mentioned here, Your Honor. There was nothing said about the mitigating factors that were brought up by Mr. Engel in his sentencing memorandum. None of his arguments were mentioned, or this court would be left to guess as to whether or not they were even considered. Because it wasn't even said that his arguments were looked at and they were denied. And in this specific instance, which is a sentence of extreme variance from the guidelines range that was applied by the district court, this explanation is not enough. As this court made clear in Wallace, a district court needs to offer a thorough explanation of this choice so the court isn't left to guess at what the district court did consider.
Now, I don't want you to take this the wrong way because I think you've done an extraordinarily good job and you're court appointed here, but do you see the possibility of you prevailing and going back and now getting a 327-month sentence and the defendant saying, well, why wasn't I told about this and why didn't my lawyer just drop the appeal if he knew that that was a possibility? And I would think you're not a remote possibility.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Not a remote possibility that he could receive a larger sentence.
Correct. Your Honor, we did speak to the defendant beforehand about that possibility of his sentence changing when he went back to the district court. So.
And changing to go higher? You talked to him specifically about it could go higher now?
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah. I would hope that you have that in writing from him.
Right.
So otherwise,
in effect,
that'll be the next claim here. And I want to emphasize, I think you've done an extraordinarily good job.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Next one is ineffective.
May it please the Court.
What's
Diane Berkowitz for the United States. As this Court noted, this defendant has been sentenced now three times before two different judges, and the result has always been the same. Both judges have concluded that the conduct of this defendant warrants a sentence outside the sentencing guideline range.
But there are two problems here now. We have no mention of mitigation factors and no finding by Judge Moody with respect to reliability. In other words, making judgments concerning a lot of this other conduct.
Let me address the issue. I'm sorry, Your Honor, if you could repeat again your first question.
Reliability and no mention of mitigation, of the mitigating factors.
With respect to the alleged mitigating factors, the government would dispute that, in fact, there were any mitigating factors offered by the defendant. It is his obligation to make the assertion. The assertion that he is making is that he needed to take care of his mother. As we pointed out in our brief, there is no evidence that that was, in fact, the case. There is, as the PSR would indicate, a living relative, a sister, who would be available to take take care of his mother. There is no evidence in the record that this defendant, an avowed pedophile with a 20-year history of molestation and abuse of children, would not be a danger to the community, any community in which he inserts himself. Those are not, we would dispute, mitigating factors. Simply to say that because the defendant is in his 40s, he no longer would pose a threat to the community without any proof. The evidence that was submitted was general evidence of defendants who, as they age, may be less of a danger to the community, but not specifically dealing with avowed pedophiles.
Well, as in the record, I think the court said that he had more or less an unbroken pattern of child molestation and child exploitation over 20 years. And in terms of that statement, weren't there gaps in that period of nearly 10 years each between the various incidents?
Some of the instances we're talking about, and these are the instances, for example, of the children at the local fitness facility, those did not result in criminal charges. This will also go to the issue of reliability, if I may segue into that, Your Honor. There was no dispute as to the reliability of this information. For example, the molestation of the boy from Georgia. Defendant did not challenge that there was, in fact, sexual conduct between himself and the boy from Georgia, or that the child was underage at the time of the contact. What he did allege pre-Booker was that the conduct or the contact was consensual. The judge was perfectly within his rights to make the finding that he did and to include that as the basis for his conclusion that this defendant warranted a sentence outside the sentencing guidelines. With respect to the children at the fitness center, on the record, the government stated at the 2004 preliminary sentencing hearing that after discussion with counsel, it was agreed that we would not need to call Ms. Crozier because the parties agreed, that her testimony was reliable and admissible. She testified previously. She testified regarding the complaints that were issued to her by families who had children who were being approached by this defendant. That is sufficient information upon which the sentencing court could conclude that this defendant, coupled with all the other conduct, including his conduct with Karen S., who was a witness that did testify at the sentencing hearing, was reasonable and reliable. The sentence the defendant received, 300 months, is certainly reasonable and was certainly adequately explained by the court. Taking a look, as this court has, at the case that was just argued before us, we have a defendant who is receiving a 100-year sentence just based on the sentencing guidelines. The guidelines in this case have changed, as this court has noted, and under Demery, this defendant could be subjected to an even higher sentence that is just under the sentencing guidelines. There is a recognition that this conduct, including the conduct of this defendant, is dangerous, poses a severe danger to the community in which they insert themselves. The government would submit that this is a reasonable sentence, and it was adequately explained by the district court. There's no obligation of a district court to go through an extensive litany of reasons, a numeric litany, as was the case in Jordan, although I would submit that it was a very extensive explanation of why the court came to the sentence that they did.
And when you look at our prior decision for the court to go through the reliable evidence that the court relied on and say why it was reliable, there was not a lot of explanation by the district judge here, was there?
Your Honor, the court stated that he found the evidence.
I know you want us to get to reasonableness, but I'm just really asking about the reliability findings. Was that done?
There was a reliability finding as to the testimony of Karen S., and there was no dispute as to the reliability of the other information with respect to the boy from Georgia, with respect to the fact that there was an approach to children at the fitness center in Northwest Indiana. That challenge with respect to the fitness center, the children at the fitness center in Northwest Indiana, was whether or not, pre-Booker, that conduct rose to the level of a criminal offense, not whether or not that conduct happened. There was no dispute as to those facts, Your Honor. This case, I would submit, is more analogous to, for example, the court would be more It would be more instructive to take a look at Newsom, for example, which is a case out of Wisconsin where the defendant was only in possession. There is no evidence that is available, at least in the published opinion, that would indicate that the defendant engaged in actual contact with children. In that case, the defendant appears to be strictly a voyeur and receives a sentence in excess of 300 months. Here we have an avowed pedophile who had an extensive, the evidence at the trial would indicate an extensive collection of child pornography, and on top of it, it did engage and did pursue children for purposes of sexual contact. The government would ask that this court affirm the sentence from below. Thank you.
Just briefly, Your Honor. I want to point out that this is not a guidelines sentence again. And the Newsom case is a guidelines case where the court said it was a close call whether the explanation was sufficient enough to justify the sentence. In this case, it's not a close call. There wasn't an adequate explanation. The district court made one statement about the reliability of any uncharged conduct, and that was that there was credible and reliable evidence as to the testimony of the one witness, Karen S. It was distinctly different from the statements that it made about the other uncharged conduct, where it said nothing about reliability or the credibility. No other statements were made as to the reliability of uncharged evidence. Now, the pre-sentence report mentioned all of this uncharged conduct. And in the pre-sentence report, it did not recommend that there be an upward departure at that time. In the sentencing hearings, at every opportunity, Mr. Engel challenged the reliability of the uncharged conduct and continued to do so in his sentencing briefs. And unlike the case of Volley that just came out by this court, this is not a circumstance where Mr. Engel is urging the court that it has to apply pre-Booker law. It just says that by analogy, what this court's previous mandate was that there be reliability findings, and there were none here. Thank you.
Okay, the case will be taken under advisement. That completes the call of the cases today, and the court will be in recess.